Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and another reminder to me of why I love doing this show so much, why it's such a thrill to meet these amazing men and women all over this great country of ours. That interaction alone is always enriching, but we also learn a lot. And one of the things I've learned with this interview is something apparently a lot of people haven't learned yet. If you go online and search for the first American military use of helicopters, you're likely to find that it was for medical evacuation during the Korean War. But Bob Kamen and the men who participated in Operation Ivory Soap during World War II can tell you that's not true. He was on one of six floating aircraft maintenance units in the Pacific, able to not only repair but also provide much-needed oxygen for the B-29s, which would eventually hasten the war's end. And every single one of those ARUs carried two primitive Sikorsky helicopters. In fact, the first ever helicopter medical evacuations were not in the Korean War. They were carried out by choppers from the 5th and 6th ARUs, rescuing wounded men from the Philippine jungles on June 16, 1945. I know you can raise some of your friends' eyebrows with that tidbit, and if you need some backup, I have documentation linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Bob Kamen has shared his first-person memories of the helicopters on his ship, the 2nd ARU, which combined Navy, Merchant Marines, and Army Air Corps troops to accomplish its unique purpose. Bob enlisted in the Air Corps because he wanted to fly. Then he spent all of his World War II time on a ship. But he can count a very special flight as his most recent adventure, and we'll get to that as we examine a bit of his life after World War II.
You came home from the war. Eventually, you met one of your neighbors named Carolyn, who you didn't know was there the whole time, hidden in plain sight, or what?
No, she was on the corner a lot there. I spotted her because she was out cutting the grass. She's a beautiful girl with a terrific body. So the next week, a friend of mine and I took her and another girl out to a lake, Crystal Lake. She had a swim there, went with her steady ever since then. And we've married for 68 years. Then she left us.
68 years of marriage and kids and grandkids and great-grandkids. When did you start going to these annual reunions of the 2nd ARU?
I didn't make the first one, 51st one I did. They were all over the country, really. We had about 8 of them. Before so many died with age that we just broke up then.
And I'm just guessing, I have a feeling maybe that going to those reunions, maybe you learned some things that you hadn't been aware of during the war.
Well, that's where we learned that we were a secret outfit. We didn't know that before that.
So the first time you found out that your duty in World War II was classified was 52 years later when they told you guys it's declassified now?
Yeah, now it is. They let go of the papers.
Did you say, well, oops, I've been telling people about it all these years?
Yeah. Well, actually, I never talked about it too much. In fact, my kids didn't know too much about what I did. They didn't know I was out floating around on a ship or whatever. And after a while, that's when I told them. Then they started asking questions.
And how'd you get into television?
I went to school for it to start with. American Television Institute, started that in ABC in Chicago.
You carried out a number of different roles in television production over all those years. What were the things that you enjoyed doing the most?
Well, actually, I enjoyed doing sound effects. I was part of the shows then. The other times you're on camera or boom or whatever. It just seemed like with the sound effects, I was actually part of the show. Like my son says, in school one time, they asked him what the father did. My gun comes up. I was a duck. I looked at him. Even the teacher had to come find out what's going on. But he wouldn't back down on it. Did get fan letters for the duck that I would argue with the people on the screen. It was a big part of the show, really. The ant army and all different types of sound effects for the show.
I bet you worked with or interacted with some people whose names we might know also.
Well, Charlton Heston come in. This is when I was a TD.
That's technical director.
Yeah. He came in and sat in back of me. It was a Saturday afternoon. And he's talking and asking questions about what I'm doing. And all of a sudden, the stage manager from the show he was supposed to be on comes looking for him. I didn't know it was Charlton Heston at the time. He come in all alone.
Well, I don't want to miss anything from your time in World War II, and feel free to throw in anything you think is relevant. But I know you've had an adventure just in the last couple years that maybe brought some of those memories coming back. Your son went with you, and Honor Flight of Southern Nevada took you and a bunch of other veterans from here in Vegas back to Washington, D.C. to see a lot of impressive and moving sights. What about that National World War II Memorial, where the big fountains in the middle and the Pacific and the Atlantic and the wall of gold stars for 400,000 guys like you who didn't come home?
Actually, that thing was beautiful. They had plaques all around the thing. It was, I'd say, a half a block in size, square. You enjoyed seeing all the plaques and the fountain and everything in there. It was a very good deal. They had it set up beautifully so we could see all this, because they had time to spend there.
When you looked at all those gold stars, did you think about guys like Robert Coffin or maybe others who you knew who didn't have the life that you had after the war?
Yeah, because the number of stars there were amazing. But then you read what they represented. Like, each star was not one person. I think it was 100 people for that one star. And there looked like thousands of stars there. And you felt bad for it, but there's nothing you can do, of course. You, like, enjoyed that all that much more. But actually, we run into another unit from Washington, I think it was, the guy that actually restarted the things for the different states that do this. And he was explaining different plaques, which was very interesting.
Is that Earl Morse, the guy who started Honor Flight? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah.
I'm sure there were things you expected to happen, and you knew some of the places you were going to go. But was there anything that happened that surprised you, that you didn't expect, that maybe was a pleasant surprise?
The escort from monument to monument was a police escort in front of you, thinking, what are these people that are taking off to the side from this motorcycle policeman going through, wondering, who the heck is on that bus? About 30 of us.
Well, I imagine that the royal treatment didn't end there. What was waiting for you when you landed back here in Las Vegas?
Hundreds of people shaking our hand, bands and different things all over the airport. In fact, we had two welcoming committees there. When we got off the plane, and then halfway through, another group was there wanting to see us, shake our hands, hear stories. The kids were the main thing there. Beautiful little kid. She was interested in how old I was, mainly, to be in the Second World War. She never knew really what it was. And Boy Scouts were there to greet us. The bands were Army, Navy, bagpipes were there, everything. But we were really surprised to see such a welcoming committee when we were coming home.
And I'm just guessing, but there are probably a lot of years where you might have felt that nobody really cared whether or not you were in the service.
Yeah, because I don't know how many years back it was. That was when I was still working. There's a bunch that said, we shouldn't have dropped a bomb on Japanese. That was bad. We shouldn't have done that. But they didn't forget that there's been thousands more killed on our side and theirs if the war continued.
Maybe millions more.
Yeah, that's true. That did bring it to an end, which was good.
So that whole Honor Flight experience, how'd that make you feel? And did it make you look at your own military service any differently than you had before?
No, actually it didn't. I enjoyed being honored with it, with the people. I never shook so many hands in my life as I did there. But knowing that there's other men in the war, in our group, that did a lot more dangerous things than I did, where I was sleeping in clean quarters most of the time. I knew the other guys were shot at and went on beaches. I didn't have to do that, which I would find myself happy or lucky that I didn't, because I could have been dead just like he were.
Well, I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us your story. When you think about your time in the Army Air Corps, is there something that you'd say you're most proud of?
Well, being there for the planes when they came in, if they came in, needed repair. We got the equipment, the men that could repair it, and we had aboard our ship people that could shoot the guns were trained at them, and the merchant marines take us around. I felt myself very lucky.
Well, we're just about out of time, Bob, but for the sake of your 4 kids, 3 grandkids, and 6 great-grandkids, who wouldn't be here if you didn't make it home from World War II, after seeing a list of 10 air raids that your ship endured, I just want to make sure you didn't leave out any details about close calls you might have had all those years ago.
Well, we were in the air attacks, but they weren't after our ship because it's a Liberty ship. That's nothing. They went after the bigger ships.
Well, and maybe that's an important point we didn't hit on, because Liberty ships, I mean, there were so many of them, they could make them in practically 10 minutes at Kaiser Shipyards in the Bay Area. So you guys were kind of in disguise. You looked like any other Liberty ship. You just had a very different purpose.
Yeah, because we did have a helicopter pad, but they wouldn't know what that was on there. If they found out we were there for B-29s, they would have been after us. We did get one Japanese plane that we actually shot down. That was illegal. It was just something that had to be done. That was the war that was fought to actually save everybody, save the world, I think. We were out there secret because other people were dying for these islands, and these islands were not easy to take.
And you said a lot of guys died to take those islands. And, you know, throughout World War II, 406,000 Americans died while serving our country. How should we remember those guys? Guys like Robert Coffin, who you mentioned, how should they be remembered now?
Remember, they're there to help this country, to keep their democracy and enjoy it.
Well, I ask you what you're most proud of, but at age 92, what would you say you're most thankful for?
Being here yet. Being with my wife for 68 years was the biggest thing. It was a great marriage.
I guess one more thing. On the Project Ivory Soap, were you guys aware that that was the name the government had given to this ARU idea?
No. That came out after we were, you know, one of the reunions. We're just a landing craft repair unit. Actually, I don't think we thought we were that big, and there was only 6 of us, 6 ships.
Did you guys get a chuckle out of that? The Ivory Soap thing? That's kind of a funny name to give this important military operation, right?
I don't know where they got it, really. Because all we're doing is floating around like Ivory Soap does.
A little piece of history I'd never heard of before, and I'm guessing you hadn't either. That's Bob Kamen, 92 years old, of Henderson, Nevada. Don't forget to find photos of Bob then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.